You're watching Matt. You're watching Network Radio. Live from the Media Broadcasting Center.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade.
It looks like one of those scenes of an old building being purposely dynamited and blown.
When we are successful,
I'm just a patsy.
And we will be.
We're ready to make to come to the microphone, so we'll listen up.
A new world order.
So my name's Robbie Parker.
It might have appeared that way, but from my close-up inspection, there's no evidence of a plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th.
President Kennedy died at 1 p.m.
Live from the Media Broadcasting Center.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, where it gives me great pleasure to introduce my special guest for the first hour. He has an extensive military and defense industry background, in particular in the evaluation of military equipment for suitability for purchase by the Department of Defense. He's been an astute student of military and international affairs, and I'm very pleased to have him here. Mike Sparks, welcome to The Real Deal.
Welcome to be here, Jim.
I'm just delighted, Mike. And I know you've been doing a lot of research on what is known as hive theory. So shall we begin with your first slide?
Yes, we should. The truth that we have here in the United States that we don't want to accept is that our country has become a hive, a fascist police state, where you cannot differ from the prevailing groupthink the narrative that's been put out there, which is not what the Founding Fathers wanted. But what is not happening is the corrective actions are not taking place because people feel that the country should be better because of the virtue of the U.S. Constitution. The American people feel they're entitled to have a better country. And what I want to discuss today, tonight, is that the U.S. Constitution has been perverted. It's not strong enough to give us a good country. A strong moral country. We're going to have to earn it. We're going to have to make this country great. And it's not great now. The Constitution's not going to do it, especially in its perverted form. I think the U.S. Constitution is an above average document, giving you an above average governmental system. But if you look at the U.S. Constitution at face value, what it says, you'll see it's really a fight club. I call the U.S. Constitution fight club, fair fight club. It doesn't have very much morality in it, and it's all about economic exploitation. It's basically saying, here you are, play fair, don't make up stuff about other people and throw them in prison and dungeons. You're going to have some kind of probable cause, but it's really just a free-for-all. If you look at the U.S. Constitution, it's setting up a battle for whatever faction is going to take over the country. And you will also notice there are no safeguards in the U.S. Constitution against reality fraud, which could cause a moral panic. And you say, well, you know, that's a new thing and everything like that. No, it is not. We're going to find out tonight that this is not a new thing. 9/11s, Sandy Hooks, and Bernardino shootings, these are not new. We had a thing back in our very founding called the Boston Tea Party in 1773. We had people dressing up as Indians. You say, well, that's just comical. No, no, no. By them dressing up as Indians, that meant that nobody got arrested. And when nobody gets arrested in the American legal system, guess what? Nothing happens. There's nobody on defense, and there's no prosecutions on offense. Nothing happens. The American legal system is based on no interest in the truth. There is nothing in the U.S. Constitution that shows an interest, an abiding interest in the truth about anything. It's only if your ox gets gored. And if nobody's ox gets gored, nobody gets arrested because they're all Indians, right? Guess what? Reality fraud just happens and the American people take their lumps.
Mike, I'm a little curious about some of your remarks here. I certainly agree that the Constitution is not being adhered to. We have a president who seems to be dedicated to its subversion, especially or most obviously with regard to the Second Amendment, where a whole host of contrived, fabricated events have been used to motivate his policies and programs by instilling fear into the American people to make us more amenable to political manipulation. But as a framework with a division of powers into three branches, legislative, executive, judiciary, a host of other issues, including the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments, the Constitution, it seems to me there's quite a bit built in there about process, about procedure, that if only it were adhered to, would in general have the right outcome.
No, there is nothing in the U.S. Constitution against reality fraud. There's nothing in there for a Boston Tea Party, and that's what I'm bringing this up. If you go to the third slide, we're going a little out of order here. The Boston Tea Party was done in 1773 by the very people who wrote the U.S. Constitution. Just 11 years later, you know, they have the Constitutional Convention. These same people did the Boston Tea Party. There is nothing in there. To do something against reality fraud, you need to have inquest, a public inquest mechanism, some kind of grand jury of the United States. There is nothing like that in the U.S. Constitution.
Why don't you elaborate upon what you mean by reality fraud, Mike? I take it you would subsume Sandy Hook, the Boston Marathon, and a host of these other recent events under that umbrella.
Right. It's just like the Boston Tea Party. The Boston Tea Party was an event. It's put in the nation's consciousness, its narrative, and there's no fact-checking there. There's no investigative mechanism to handle that crime of reality fraud. The Founding Fathers deliberately did not include in the nation's framework anything against reality fraud, where an event happens and it's attributed to the false flag, in this case it's Indians, but everyone nods and winks and knows it was American settlers that dressed up as Indians. But the point is that the American settlers, that protesters, tax protesters who dressed up as Indians, got away scot-free, just like Bush and Cheney and Olson and all those guys got away of 9/11. You just have enough camouflage, enough smokescreen about the event, major crimes will be done against the collective body of the we the people. There's no we the people protection against reality fraud. And so what I'm saying to the research community, 9/11 truth, JFK truth, whatever you are, if you do not mention the past precedents of human nature, that human beings can get together and pull off complex scams, false flag incidents, false flag attacks like the Boston Tea Party, and in World War II, we would bomb actual plants and bases so the Germans could see us, so then they could report back that the plant was destroyed. We would do all kinds of deceptions like that, which is in the book Bodyguard of Lies by Anthony Keith Brown, which no one will read. Then you got a movie called Triple Cross with Christopher Plummer, where it shows Eddie Chapman was used as a triple agent by both sides, and he actually shows the aircraft factory being blown up. I mean, how much of a visual do you need? If the truth movement does not tie into these past precedents, then you go to my next slide.
Well, don't you want to go back to number two?
You see the next slide with a bunch of happy faces and one malcontent. Yep. We are going to be considered nutcases. They're going to say, right, you're just making this up. This is new. 9/11 CGI of planes going into buildings, people being hypnotized and acting like shooters, or people in the position in the place to be blamed as shooters. They're going to say, all this is nutty stuff, that you're a malcontent. You're just not happy with the way the world is, America is, and you're just a bad apple. If you do not tie in to, you know, the Boston Tea Party and then World War II's deception, the truth movement is going to continue to fail because it's not resonating with the American people.
Mike, let me just raise a point. The National Defense Appropriation Act of 2013 nullified the Smith-Mundt Act of 1948, which precluded the use of the same techniques of propaganda and disinformation within the United States that had been practiced without. And it seems to me that much of what you're talking about actually would run afoul of the Smith-Mundt Act had it not been nullified, because only now can the news media, the papers, television, and so forth broadcast knowingly false reports about events like 9/11, Sandy Hook, the Boston bombing, and so forth. Whereas with the Smith-Mundt Act, that would have been illegal. In other words, I'm wondering whether you're criticizing a document that was intended to formalize procedures for passing laws with some of the laws that it would have been advisable to pass, such as the Smith-Mundt Act.
No, I'm not. I'm saying it's got to be higher upstream. What I was going to say later in this discussion is that the U.S. Constitution, not only does it not have morality in it very much, it foists the dirty details down to the state and local governments in the minutia. And what you just did was pull out a minutia law downstream that somebody passed years later. I'm saying it needs to be higher up the stream. It needs to be in the body of the U.S. Constitution, that if our country was founded by the Boston Tea Party, a false flag attack, then it needs to be high in the body of the U.S. Constitution's body, not later on when somebody gets down to, you know, thou shalt not park their boat in front of my house.
Mike, what are you saying should be embedded in the Constitution? That the agents of the United States should only act in a truthful, honest, and upright fashion?
No, I'm saying we have to deal with the concept of a false flag reality fraud event. These events are so huge, they need to be tackled at the national level, and they need to be identified as such in the body of the U.S. Constitution so it doesn't get done to us.
Well, are you suggesting an amendment to the Constitution or a national constitution to revise the Constitution?
Right. Yeah. Later on in this discussion, I'm saying that Governor Abbott is calling in Texas for a constitutional convention. And I'm saying that constitutional convention should have an amendment where we tackle fraud, reality frauds, hoaxes, libel. In the United States of America right now, if you are libeled by somebody and that libel doesn't prove that you've suffered monetary damage, they're not going to do anything about it. That is wrong. The United States should stand for something. It should have morality. And that's what I'll talk about later. We should have the last five, the Ten Commandments should be the American morality code. We have to have some morality. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not bear false witness. We need some four or five of these laws, of these morality things saying this is America, we are Americans, we don't make up.
But Mike, there already is a very elaborate network of laws.
Doesn't work. It's got to be in the body of the U.S. Constitution saying this is who we are, what we stand for. And then once we have those four or five bedrock principles, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not covet, if we have these laws, these main laws, then we can have subsidiary laws that stem from that. Right now, we have nothing. The U.S. Constitution is Fight Club.
Let me just give you an illustration. Thou shalt not kill. We certainly condone soldiers committing killing of other soldiers within the context of warfare. We condone police killing culprits in the performance of their duty. We condone citizens killing of their home in self-defense. We have a whole history of the interpretation of, you know, murder, manslaughter, and so forth.
It's not working, Jim. It has to be in the Constitution at the very top when you first start talking about who we are, and then we can get down to the particulars. You're delving right into the particulars, and I'm telling you, when you take your car and drive from Wisconsin to Indiana and you cross the state line, they don't pull you over, put you down in the classroom, open up PowerPoint slides, and brief you on the laws of the state of Indiana and how they differ from the laws that you had in Wisconsin. This is not happening. It's not on the radar screen of the public consciousness of how we should live. There is no morality in the U.S. Constitution, very little, other than don't tread on me. If you start treading on me and you try to kill me, I will defend myself. So
well, certainly the idea of all men being equal in the eyes of the law is deeply embedded in the Constitution. And
well, I want to talk about that. That is a huge lie. Not
well,
everyone.
No, no. It's a, you may be misunderstanding it. It doesn't mean all men are created equal physically, mentally, financially, or otherwise. It means that they're
no,
all
it does. If we go down to my slides, you'll see that all men are created equal. I, that Declaration of Independence lie coming from the Enlightenment is then used to say everyone's on a level playing field. Now watch what happens. It's a rich man's trick. So it's not true. The people that have money inherited already have money to start businesses, so they already have an advantage. What this does is creates a lie. So if the guy that doesn't have these advantages doesn't succeed, you're going to say, we all started from the same point. Me, myself, my Rockefellers, we were all created equal. If you didn't succeed, it's because you didn't put the effort out. This is fascism. This is you didn't pull yourself up hard enough on your bootstraps. This all comes from an Enlightenment lie. The Enlightenment says all we are is what we make ourselves into. That is a lie. We are not created equal. If the the Declaration of Independence has said we are all created equal in the eyes of the Lord or in the eyes of the law, that'd be fine. It doesn't say that. It says we're all created equal and we're also endowed with unalienable rights. And one of the among these rights is the life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Who is you to, and I hate that the happiness is the most dangerous one. Who are we to criticize then?
Well, it's a pursuit of happiness, Mike.
Taking over the world and imprisoning and tyrannizing people. If that's there, the Illuminati get happiness by imprisoning people.
Mike, it's life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. No document can guarantee happiness. I mean, that's a highly subjective.
Now, that's another rich man's trick, pursuit of happiness. Then if the poor guy says, look, Mr. Rockefeller, I haven't been able to attain happiness, he's going to say, well, we only promised you a pursuit of it. Isn't that
Mike, Rockefeller didn't found the Constitution of the United States, Mike.
No, the people that founded it were deists. They're people who believe God.
That's right. They were.
The universe, and then he left. And it's
that's right. He created the world and let it run on its own course. Yes.
Right. Now, these deists are also Freemasons, and these guys cheat. They use
Mike. I think you're getting ahead of yourself.
Inner workings, their own inner society, secret society clubs. And they network amongst themselves, and then they further each other along in society. That's society treason. Instead of using meritocracy, the guy that gets the job is the best qualified, the guy, the hardest worker. They find out who does the Masonic handshake, who's going to the Masonic lodge. It's a rich man's trick. The whole concept of the Declaration of Independence preamble there is a rich man's trick. If you look at it carefully, and which we will, you will see that it's a setup for rich men to pull the wool over our eyes.
Well, Mike, you have a
legal statement.
You have a highly unusual and original point of view. So I want you to run with it. I want you to lay it all out so we
right.
can see
yeah,
exactly
we will go to the slides.
How you're looking at this. Did you want to skip that second slide?
Number no, we're two? On you know,
we're on
the
four with
standing
the
out.
Faces.
You know, I was trying to talk about reality fraud. The next slide, you'll see that George Bush and company executed their policy of taking resources from all over the world. So that is what's been able to happen because they believe in life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Their pursuit of happiness is that they're greedy, selfish fascists, and they have inner society, secret society that they network amongst themselves, Bohemian Group, the Bilderbergs, the Illuminati, as we call them. They all network, and they feel that they're entitled to what they do because they're just following the Declaration of Independence, life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness mentality. Their pursuit of happiness means that I'm going to be rich and you're not, and I'm going to take your resources, and if you get in my way, I kill you. Now, then the next slide, you see Governor Abbott calling for, you know, the constitutional convention, which he pretty much goes after the encroachment of the federal government on the states, which is great. I mean, it's got to be done. But he's not going after the big kahunas except for the balanced budget. Balanced budget, that's a big deal. If you put a balanced budget amendment and force these clowns to balance a budget, that would really put a major crimp in the Illuminati's lifestyle. But the main thing they should be going after is the 17th Amendment. 17th Amendment is what destroys this country. The Founding Fathers did not want two bodies of people directly elected. They wanted the senators to be temporarily appointed and posted to Washington, D.C., and under close scrutiny of the state Senate, you know, and state courthouse. And if these clowns misbehaved, they could be called back. That way, you and I, if we didn't like what's happening in Washington, D.C., we could take a day off from work and go to the state capitol and say, hey, I don't like what they're doing. But now there's no connection between state and federal government. Federal government does what it wants. We float the senators out there for 6 years, and they do whatever they damn well please. You can look
just to make it clear for those who are unaware, the 17th Amendment called for the direct election of senators just as representatives are directly elected, except, of course, by the entire state population, whereas heretofore they've been selected and appointed by the governments of the state, their legislature,
right,
and senates.
Temporarily, right. So what I then go to the next slide, you'll see that, you know, once you get all this understood, it's a good idea to put it formulated into a book. And you can read this for free online. You just go to lulu.com and put Hive Theory Sparks, and you'll get the free download.
Is that Sarah Palin?
That is Sarah Palin wrapped in the flag acting like a hive. I look for pictures of hives. They're not very nice to look at. So Sarah Palin's a lot nicer to look at than a hive, but it shows the effect, the mentality of the hive is that we will sacrifice truth for comfort. And this comfort is in a feel-good form of red, white, and blue, you know, of American fascism, American exceptionalism. And I'm showing you tonight that the American exceptionalism based on the U.S. Constitution just not justified. U.S. Constitution, great document, it's not strong enough. 25% of all people are psychosociopaths. They didn't know that in 1787, or if they did, they made it a rich man's trick in their favor. You know, it depends on how positive you want to look at these guys. But if you look at the next slide, we take the first founding father's statement to break our chains from England. We hold these truths to be self-evident. Now, that's a pretty snobby little concept there of saying this is self-evident. So if you disagree with it, you know, it's a very bold statement that all men are created equal, comma. Okay. So they're not, there's no qualifications there. Now they're moving on to something else. Then that they are endowed by their creator. Okay. So much for the founding fathers being secularists. They're not, they weren't, with certain unalienable rights. And that means that's, again, if you argue about it, you're arguing against God, okay? So these guys are pretty bold here. That among these, and that's the one I just thought about today, that means there were more. You need to find Thomas Jefferson and say, hey, what are the other unalienable rights he didn't mention? That's a little side note. Anyway, these are life, no problem with that. You know, if you don't live, nothing follows. Liberty, you know, freedom, we understand that. But that pursuit of happiness is a dangerous, dangerous statement. And I've looked into it, and some people try to quibble. The Christian people say, oh, America's a Christian nation. And back then, pursuit of happiness meant being a moral person, and that's what they meant. No. When you say it can be taken the other way, then that's why Thomas Jefferson changed it. It could have been the inalienable right. It should have been life, liberty, and property if they followed John Locke. They didn't. Thomas Jefferson put this pursuit of happiness, dementia, in there. And that opens the door up to everything. It's how are you to say to Charles Manson, no, you can't go around mass murdering people.
Well, that makes you happy. Mike, you're ignoring the fact that there's a presumption there independent of harming other persons. You're simply ignoring the moral and philosophical tradition within which this must be understood.
This is not how the rich people, the enlightened Illuminati, think. They have a mandate to go across this country, to conquer this nation, national landmass, which is what they did, murder along the way, and this LLPH gave them the mandate to do this. It is a mandate. Go to the next slide. In the next slide, I put it in red. These truths are self-evident. So what they're trying to do is create an airtight argument, which we talked about. Go to the next slide.
Well, Mike, they're trying to found it without having to argue. I mean, the question becomes, right, what are the first premises? Every argument has premises.
Right, and they're lawyers, and they're trying to make an airtight argument. And I'm saying it's a lie. It's a dangerous lie. This life, liberty, pursuit of happiness is not morally sound. It has ruined this country. Okay? It, even though the Declaration of Independence just breaks us away from England, it does inspire and permeate the other documents of the United States government. You know, it's not in the U.S. Constitution, but its mentality is there. You can't deny it. And so go to the next slide. And this is the home run right here. You go to the next slide. It's Political Ponerology is the masterpiece of Andrew Lobaczewski. He's a very old Polish guy that used to live in the Soviet-held Poland. And he did studies on evil. It's political study of evils, political ponerology. His conclusion was 24% of all people are, and he had these exotic names of different various types of psychosis and everything like that. It comes out that 24% of everybody are psychosociopaths. Either they're psychopaths without a conscience, or they're sociopaths with a weak conscience, or one that they don't follow. Okay? That means they had some brain damage or something, and the conscience part of their brain stopped working. Or they were born that way. People like W. Bush are psychopaths. They actually were born that way. He blew up frogs and little animals and insects. That's one of those things you can find out about psychopaths to see if they're psychopaths, with a cruelty to animals and insects and stuff like that. Anyway, this knowledge wasn't available to the founding fathers. This is, you know, a book that's just came out in the 80s. The point is that I believe that the U.S. Constitution lowballs evil. If you gave me, you know, stack of Bibles and say, what would you say the percentage was? I'd say no more than 10%. U.S. Constitution doesn't account for more than 10% bad people. And the fact is we need to account for 25%. 25% of all people are psychosociopaths. That would change your life. Once you realize that and you start adopting that and using it in your daily life, it'll give you peace of mind why you're having all these conflicts with people and you're a good person. It'll explain everything in life. If you understood the 1/4 of everybody you meet is probably a psychosociopath, it will change your life. And it's true. You know, obviously the Bible says all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. Yeah, from a legal perspective, we all sin. But we're talking about operative perspective. Operatively, you've got 25%, 1/4 of the people in the United States and any country that are psychosociopaths. You've got to keep those people out of the leadership positions of your country, out of your culture, your society. Because if you let them get in charge of your country or in charge of your constitution, they're going to ruin it. They're going to pervert it. And that's what's been happening ever since. The psychosociopaths have been taking money, piles of money, and bribing politicians. And then over time, they've distorted the U.S. Constitution's separation of powers. So even though it's just an above average document, now it's been ruined by the 17th Amendment, you know, having the senators do whatever they please. Paid for by the Illuminati. And you've got 16th Amendment where they've got our money for the whole year automatically deducted. So we have lost control of the country. And it's because the U.S. Constitution isn't strong enough. It did not account for 25% of everybody being a psychosociopath. Now you go to the next slide. Endowed by the Creator. Okay, so I want to make the point these guys are not secularists. Okay, but they're some kind of creationist, some kind of – I want to use the word Christian because
– They are deists. They are not Christians. They are deists who believe God
can the world
and run on its own course.
Then you got our people. You got our deist guys. Next slide. Then you got Benjamin Franklin, and you've got – looks like John Adams and probably Tom Jefferson there, or maybe Madison. Okay, cool. All right. Not so bad. And it's better than nothing. Then you go to the next slide. Unalienable rights, okay, says you can't take it away, you know, that doesn't mean people aren't going to try today, which is what they're doing, okay, no problem. Maybe we should use the word unalienable a little more often in our arguments. But no, look at the next slide. All of these things come from the Enlightenment. The difference between the American execution and the Enlightenment, pardon the pun here, use of the word execution, is that we understood that we couldn't just have one guy in charge of the revolution. Over in France, Robespierre got in control, and he was off the heads of everybody with that guillotine. But the Enlightenment is not a good thing. The Enlightenment is the idea that we are what we make ourselves into, and that's just not true. We are not equal. We are all of tremendous value, but we're not equal. Okay, we're not equal. But what they would tell the people, the sheeple, us, is not what they tell each other. So you may think, Jim Fetzer, that these guys, the Enlightenment guys, are the guys that gave us science through reductionism. They're just going to find some process out of reductionism of a process to a repeatable test tube experiment. That's not what they think themselves. They think to a certain point they can find out what runs universe, the universe experiment, science, scientific method. But amongst themselves, this dark side of the Enlightenment, you see wizards, alchemists, spiritual seekers. If you go to an Illuminati meeting of all these guys, yeah, they're going to say put $1 billion into research, into, let's say, time travel or something like that. But they're also going to do seances. They're going to try to talk to demons. They're going to do all that stuff that your scientific people are not supposed to believe in. See, but they don't. See, they understand you can get so much out of nature, but there is a supernatural, and they know it exists, and they just don't want to give it to the sheeple. They reserve the sheeple themselves. So if I define an Illuminati person, I'd say he or she is a theosophist. They believe man will become God. And the way they're going to do it is by nature. They worship nature, which is witchcraft. But also, they believe in nature having a supernatural component. So they're witches with a supernatural. That's what the Illuminati are. They believe in covering, you know, every base. And they do that. The good thing is that quantum physics has mocked them. While they've tried to reduce everything to a smallest part, when you start observing at the atomic level, the neutrons and the electrons look at you and they move. They know that they're being watched. So this is kind of like maybe one of the final lines of defense God has made for these evil men. These men are trying to find a way to create, you know, eternal life without any kind of repentance. So they want to break the code, the death, the entropy. And God has some little tricks for them. And one of them is a quantum physics. When you try to observe something, it knows that you're observing it, and it moves. Now, they then try to get some kind of benefit out of that. See, if you just have a lot of willpower, you're going to be able to change your environment around you, and you're going to turn yourself into a self-made man, and, you know, Heil Hitler. It's all this will-to-power crap. I mean, they try to get some kind of a benefit out of them being rebuffed by God. But that's these guys, the people with the money that have been, you know, weaned from us through taxes and other illegal criminal activities, they do this dark science. That's why they have their underground bases, and they got the bases, you know, out in remote areas. They're the mad scientists trying
Mike, I just want to remind you have 25 minutes to cover the rest of your slides, so you may have to expedite.
Oh, no, we're doing good. We're doing good. Okay. We're farther along than I expected.
Okay.
All right, then you go to the next slide. That among these, now there's a little juicy thought we talked about before. I'd like to find out what are all of the unalienable rights Thomas Jefferson thinks there are. That's something I'm going to keep in the back of my mind. I want to know what some of those other rights are. Right to marry a woman with a nice cleavage. You know, I mean, Thomas Jefferson, he was quite a womanizer. I'd be interesting to see what his other unalienable rights are. Okay, next slide. The next slide should be the life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness one, which we've already discussed.
There it is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very dangerous because the pursuit of happiness is not conditionalized through moral means or just moral pursuit of happiness or lawful pursuit of happiness. Just right there, pursuit of happiness.
Yep. If you're serious, bear in mind, Mike, for everyone to have to write the life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, it must be possible for everyone to pursue it without violating others' right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
It's not in there, Jim. It's not
implied,
in there.
Right there. It's implied, Mike.
No, it is not. Implied.
Well, of course it is. How could you have – those rights are everyone's right, Mike. It's not just the rich. It's the right of every single person.
Bingo. See, you're raising the actual point. The point is then what right might makes right. There is going to be conflict. If you're telling everybody, go for it. You got the big continent here in the United States, go for it, go across the West, build the railroad, kill the Indians, whatever you want to do, wipe out the buffalo, or just be, you know, Little House on the Prairie, Laura Ingraham Wilder, live frugally and morally. There's going to be a clash. And that was one of the best things about the ending of that damn show, Little House on the Prairie. The best part of the show was the last episode. And I'll tell you what happened. They blew the town up. because in the last episode of the show, Michael Landon showed that the town was built on a lie. Somebody actually owned the deed, the land that they were on, and they wanted the land back. So the settlers, you know, blew up the town rather than give up their land to these people. No, that is just because there's going to be a conflict doesn't mean that the Illuminati are not back there laughing and saying, ha ha, there's going to be a conflict. We're going to see who wins. The ones with the most money and the most guns are going to win. And you go to the next slide, and that's exactly what George Bush and these clowns have done for decades. They believe the United States of America is an economic phenomenon. It's an economic exploitation formula that they're pursuing LLPH in their own way. And if you got in the way, you didn't pull yourself up by your bootstraps well enough. You didn't. It's your fault. I was doing what I have a right to do, and you did what you did, and sorry, I dominated. That's how they think. I'm not agreeing with it. I'm just trying to point it out. Okay, go to the next slide. We the people, we are saying that's the basis for our U.S. constitutional law. Okay, we at the very first preamble, it says that if the government starts going south, we can start over again if it's not serving we the people. That is where we got to hang on to. That is our right to fix this Constitution. Because right now it's not serving we the people. It's serving we the 1%, the U.S. Constitution and the government system we have. It's only serving the 1%ers. Now, all of this stuff about the finer print details, we go to next slide, you will see came out from the marriage certificate crisis when that gal in Tennessee was saying, I'm not going to sign these licenses. And we don't have to go into particulars on that. It's just the concept. Why is a marriage license for, you know, national debate being decided at the state level? Because that's what the founding fathers did. It's very clever. They played good cop, bad cop. In other words, they make this U.S. Constitution with this highfalutin separation of powers. They leave the dirty details to the state and local governments. And that's why I said earlier, when you change states and you're driving to the state, you don't get stopped and given a briefing of the new laws. You see, it's lost in the minutia. I am saying it's not good enough. It's not good enough to have morality way down in a fine print because no one's going to read this stuff. You're only going to become an issue if you know you're two gay people and you're trying to get married and some clerk doesn't want you to get married. And then it becomes an issue. See, that's too late. My contention is we need a constitutional convention that bans secret society membership. We need an amendment that bans it because that's treason. How can you serve two masters? How can you be upholding the U.S. Constitution and, you know, serve two masters? And, you know, I got a next slide. You'll see a picture of what we did with the economic exploitation. We went ahead and ran across the country and took the land from the Indians. But go to the next slide.
Well, I like that slide, Mike. I like that one.
Oh, I know. It's what happened.
Maybe those faces ought to be on Mount Rushmore.
Right, but what we ought to do is stop doing it. It's a little late now to take 310 million Americans and evict ourselves to another planet or something. But we can at least say it was wrong, what we did to the Indians, and we can stop doing it overseas right now to Afghanistan and Iraqis and all the people that the CIA exports these dictatorial governments with the faux democracies. All that crap that we've been doing since 1945, we're doing the same. It's just like taking from the Indians. We can stop doing that. I hate the people that are moral relativists. They'll say, Mike, you tell me, you know, we want to disband the CIA. But we shouldn't because we have no moral leg to stand on because we stole from the Indians. Wrong. I hate that moral relativism crap. That's like saying, I got robbed last week, so I'm not going to lock my door this week. No. If we did something wrong in the past, we need to own up to it, correct as much as we can, and we need to stop that behavior currently. So that's what I'm saying about that. Now, in the next slide, it says, and I use it because it's talking about, you know, policemen pulling you over just to shake you down for money. It says here, well, officer, a crime requires an injured party. See, that is another huge essential fact that's wrong with the U.S. Constitution is there's no interest in the truth. There's no abiding interest in truth and in justice in the U.S. Constitution. It's Fight Club. I'm saying another amendment needs to be against reality fraud. That means if there's a huge event like the Boston Tea Party, 9/11, there has to be a mechanism in place where we the people could get to the truth of the matter and not have an injured party that says my ox has been gored. or you're trying to take my life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness because I'm a criminal. You know, I'm Ted Olson. You're trying to arrest me because we faked the death of my wife. Wah, you know, protect me. You know, it's too late for that. We need something that isn't dependent upon Ted Olson being on trial. We need a mechanism in the Constitution that understands that there's events that are beyond just individuals, you know, being true or guilty or innocent in the John Adams, you know, bicameral way, okay? Because if you don't do that, we'll go to the next slide. Let's say we do happen to capture somebody or somebody is offered as a patsy, bam, they get killed. As they said in the brilliant movie, Oliver Stone movie, someone saved the DA a whole lot of work, as the character in that movie said. By killing Oswald, there was no trial. There was no investigation. See, that's what the whole point is. JFK's assassination should have showed you reality fraud of an event of importance to the whole country that has been not served by our, you know, prosecution, defense, legal system. Because there's no interest, abiding interest in the truth in the U.S. Constitution. You see what I'm saying? There is no mechanism to go after truth. We have to wait until somebody like, you know, Jim Garrison finds somebody to Clay Shaw, Clay Bertrand to prosecute. I'm saying that's too late. So go to the next slide. What I'm proposing, you may not like this, Jim, but we've got to agree to some kind of damn morality. All right, damn morality, like that? And you can't use the first five of the Ten Commandments because that's about, you know, a religious decision to choose following God of the Bible. But I think we can all agree to the last five. Honor thy father and mother. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not bear false witness. And thou shalt not covet. If those were the moral base of the United States of America, I think even a secular person could agree that's what morality is.
Well, okay? Let me resurrect those counterexamples I introduced at the beginning.
Yeah, now
what about soldiers in combat? What about police and the performance of their duty? What about civilians and self-defense? Is three classes of cases where we seem to allow exceptions to the rule thou shalt not kill.
Right, but that's not the same. Thou shalt not kill means kill frivolously, not murder. And that's what it's saying. It's saying thou shalt not murder, kill. But if it's self-defense, you are ending the biological life of another person for self-defense. You're just not frivolously killing somebody. You're protecting somebody who's been threatened. So the ideal goal is to protect life in general, is what that is saying. Don't be going around killing. And I also like the kill word better. You know why? Because it also means there are other ways that you kill somebody. Torture is a form of killing somebody. It's the process of depriving their health is a slow form of killing them. So I like that the fact that it says thou shalt not kill and thou shalt not murder, because murder means just the ending of the biological life of a person. Thou shalt not kill also implies anything that erodes life, okay, like torture, okay? Well, that's how I answer that. I also like thou shalt not bear false witness, because if we had that as in the moral base of the United States in our Constitution, then we could go after libel, all these people just make crap up about people, and you have to wait until you've lost $1 million or something, and then you can sue them. What kind of nonsense is that? If we had an abiding interest in truth, anyone that lies knowingly in a hoax or to libel somebody or to worse, do a false flag attack and con the whole country in its narrative, we can go after them because we have a moral basis for it now. Thou shalt now bear false witness. And that's what 9/11, Sandy Hook, and all these San Bernardino shootings are. They're bearing, thou shalt bear false witness. I'm sure you'd agree with that.
I suspect if number seven were a condition for serving in the American government, that the halls of Congress would be vacant.
Well, right. The adultery thing isn't the most damning thing. The actual thing is thou shalt never bear false witness. These people that are members of secret societies are lying. When they say, I will uphold the U.S. Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic, they're already in an enemy camp. So they're lying. They're bearing false witness. They're taking an oath to protect something, and they're already violating it. You know, whether they sign up to be in the CIA or, you know, just become a congressman or a senator, president of the United States.
Mike, I wonder how you would feel about a simpler principle that is very profound, to wit, that no one should ever treat any other person merely as a means, but only as intrinsically valuable. In other words, always treat other persons with respect.
No, I'd agree with that. That's in the Bible. You know, I'm a Christian, so I would say yes. But that's what the part of the debate would be, is what do we as Americans believe in? Why are we a great country? Better than, let's say, Switzerland or something like that. We've got to have some class. We've got to have some morality and say, this is what we stand for. And we can do it without saying one religion or another is being incorporated. I got to tell you, I had an argument with one of these military supposed freedom guys, and he was a liar. I said, okay, no Christian Bible verses on a gun sight. I said, well, let's get all that Freemason crap off our dollar bill. And he would not agree to that. I said, well, just take it off and put an Iowa-class battleship on the back. No. And again, matter what I said, it was okay for him to have his Freemasonic satanic crap on the dollar bill.
What was the rationale for that, Mike, out of curiosity?
Over the radio. He's just being an asshole. He's just a lying asshole. The hypocrite is not strong enough of a word. He wants his religion of Freemasonic Satanism to be the religion of the United States of America, of the U.S. government. And they're supposed to have no separation of church and state. We're not supposed to have an establishment of any religion forced down our throats. And he's fine with it as long as it's satanic crap, as long as it's little owls and little demon figures on your dollar bill and, you know, all-seeing eyes and all that crap. I said, well, let's play fair, quid pro quo. Take that crap off, put a battleship on the back, or put some neutral symbol of America. And he wouldn't do it. He would not do it. And now Mickey Weinstein's a leader of it. It was his underling, his under guy. You know, whatever the second in command was. And they're just liars. These people have hypocrites is just not the word. They're just evil. They don't want any Christian influence, but they can have all their Freemasonic stuff, you know. And that Freemasonic stuff is basically a lot of that life, liberty, pursuit of happiness stuff, that I'm going to go for it, the gusto. It's life is just all there is now, here and now. It may be just lights go out tomorrow. I'm going to go for it, and I'm going to step on you. That's too damn bad. You weren't as networking as well as I was, and me and my Freemasons. But no, I would love to have your golden rule type thing. It wouldn't be conditional. Don't treat people just as you would want to be treated. That's a good one. But say, look, there's intrinsic value in every human being. The Bible teaches that. It's true. Everybody has great intrinsic value. And you see that in the movie and the book Killer Angels by Michael Cera, where he says when you finally get down to final analysis, when he's trying to get the deserters to fight together, he says, we're going to lose this country. But in final analysis, we're all fighting for each other. That's beautiful. You know, you might put tears to your eyes and you see that scene with Jeff Daniels in the end of Killer Angels, which is called Gettysburg movie. But we are fighting for each other. But the Illuminati don't feel that way. They actually feel that their feces doesn't stink. They think they're superior. And I've run into these people, Jim. I've actually briefed them on military things to try to get military things accomplished. And they won't do a damn thing to make anything better for our soldiers. And that disgusts me. You know, 6,000 plus dead in Iraq and Afghanistan, 60,000 wounded. And they will not buy a tracked armored vehicle that will roll
not
on and off.
Not to mention the staggering numbers of Iraqi and Afghans.
Yeah, but they're ragheads. They're subhuman. You know, the pyramid of military ego.
You're talking about how others perceive them, but they are also of equal worth.
Oh, no, they are of equal worth. And believe me, God is not going to be happy, is not going to look the other way. So all these people say America is a Christian nation and America has been misbehaving and these evil men have been misbehaving in our name. We're going to be held accountable. What that means is God's going to punish America. I don't want to make pussyfoot around here. Bad things are going to happen to the United States of America, and we deserve it. We get our house in order. And that's what I'm saying to all these Christians. Stop sitting in your butt saying that this is a Christian country, and we have a Christian constitution when we don't. It's not very strong. It's definitely been perverted and weakened. It's not damn good enough. Another thing that just gets my ire is this Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. That is idolatry. It's idolatry to a Christian because God says don't worship an inanimate object. But it's just plain old stupid. If you're a secular person, why are you pledging allegiance to an object? It's not even alive. You know why? Because it's designed so you can take that flag and attach it to any evil cause, and you got these stupid military sheeple who are going to follow the flag wherever it goes. Wrong. We should not be pledging allegiance to an inanimate object, either as a Christian or as a secular person who's not an idiot. You don't pledge allegiance to an inanimate object.
Of course, it says I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic.
Too late.
And
too
to
late.
The Republic
and
for which it stands.
It says, and to
well, it's functioning as a symbol, Mike. It's functioning as a
too
symbol.
Late. It
stands for something else.
No, it's too late. If it wasn't connected, then they wouldn't have put the and to there.
You may be approaching this in an overly literary.
Military people will do anything for the flag. There are people who are they're tried to do, you know, a flag burning amendment that almost passed by one vote. I don't know who the guy was who saved our app, but it almost passed a flag burning amendment. They were going to make this the American flag into an idol of worship. And Jim, you just don't hang out in the circles I do. I hang out in circles where people will kill for that inanimate object. If you burn it or if you desecrate it or anything like that, and that's idolatry. And I just broke friendship with a lifelong friend who's supposed to be a Christian, but he's an America worshiper. He worships the United States of America. And idolatry, in his case, is the American flag. The American flag is not to be worshipped, and that's what it comes down to when we pledge allegiance to the flag. I mean, that's
a damn. Chance, we got a couple more slides to go. I think you've got something uploading here.
I was trying to put something uplifting here. The American people are generally decent. If you look at ponerology, it's 25% are psychosociopaths. 40% are, you know, from the Milgen experiment, they're going to do whatever they're told. So if it says shock the guy to death, they'll shock the guy to death. And then there's a 35% that are decent people, like Charlie Brown, who are going to do whatever is the right thing no matter what, even though he goes trick-or-treating and he gets the rock all the time. That's your conscience doers. There's 35% of everybody is just going to be the conscience doers. If you want to look at the psychopath, you look at Lucy, the girl that always pulls the football when he tries to kick the football. Okay, but anyway, supposed to be a little humor in that. Okay?
Lucy is sociopath.
Sociopath.
That's a bit rich, Mike.
Right, she is, right. But, you know, that's what Charles Schulz was trying to do in the Peanuts. It's supposed to be psychology. You know that. If you go to Wikipedia, Charles Schulz, it'll say he's trying to show psychology of different types of, you know, commonly stereotyped people. And Charlie Brown is the do-gooder, 35% are conscience doer. You know, it's always doing their good thing. If we can gain control of the situation, then we can build that Christmas tree that you see. It just got blocked. But you see the Christmas tree
Chance, we got some odd coverage about password unprotection.
Uh-oh. Yeah, we can build that tree, that nice little American dream. We can build it. But we're going to have to build it. It's not going to just build itself. Right now, the country is being run by evil men, and they are taking LLPH and running with it. Now, the other option we have is the last slide, and that is if we don't reform the country, okay, it's going to continue down the road of police state, and you better find yourself a hot chick and just try to live out the
apocalypse. Is that the idea? Are they doing it in the road? Is that what this is about?
Well, I don't think they're doing that, but they're just having a nice little romantic time. You know.
Seems highly inopportune, all things considered.
Well, it looks like, I think from the caption when I got this picture, was that they had just survived the onslaught of the police. So they're celebrating that they made it. But, it's only a short-term alleviation there. But those are our choices. We're going to have the Charlie Brown's Peanuts Christmas ending, or we're going to have the James Bond hot chick world blowing up all around you ending. You know, but if we do this right, it'll be fun either way.
Well, this has been fascinating, Mike. You've certainly given us a lot to think about, a very original point of view. I have, you know, I would have a lot to say about many different aspects, but I'm very glad you had the chance here to present it this evening.
Right. If there's anything you go away with, use that Boston Tea Party all the time. You got
to permanently wanted to skip that slide number two.
Which slide was that?
It was a chart. It was a graph.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's the truth of the matter is, you know, we can claim the United States is a Christian nation, but the moral panic we've been in since 9/11, which means, you know, we're worried about our consumerist lifestyle going away. The data shows that less and less people believe in God. Period. I mean, they believe that, you know, tomorrow is it. You know, you die, lights go out, that's it. I don't believe that because I've actually dealt with demons. I've actually dealt with supernatural beings. I don't have an option to not believe in God and the Bible. I've actually done battle, combated these beings. I know that there's life out there that's not human, it's intelligent life, and it doesn't like us.
Well, Mike,
the demons don't like us.
Mike, it's been fascinating. I can't thank you enough. This is Jim Fetzer thanking my special guest for the first hour, Mike Sparks, for being here. And before the Christmas holidays, when we were deprived of our opportunity to broadcast, I had some interesting interviews. And for the second hour, one on the People Speak show will be available for you. I think you may find it quite interesting. Thanks for being here, Mike, this first hour. Stick around for the second. This is Jim Fetzer, your host. Okay. We'll be right back.
We can now say, with moral certainty and considerable scientific authority, that the death of JFK was committed by a meticulously executed conspiracy which was obscured by an extensive cover-up. Murder in Dealey Plaza, edited by James Fetzer, goes to the heart of the JFK assassination. You'll read new and up-to-date information regarding the Secret Service, the Lincoln Limousine, the medical evidence, the cover-up, altering the film, framing the patsy, and the silent historians. Also, 16 smoking guns, each one crushing the government's lone assassin scenario. A world-class chronology of November 22, 1963. Chapters by David W. Mantic, Gary Aguilar, Vincent Palomara, Douglas Weldon, Jack White, Ira David Wood III, James H. Fetzer, Doug Horn, and a classic essay by Bertrand Russell. The complete story in the pages of one single book, edited by James H. Fetzer. Read it now. Read it again. You'll use it as a reference. Murder in Dealey Plaza. Available at Amazon.com and major bookstores around the world. It's murder.
Less than 3% of you people read books. Because less than 15% of you read newspapers. Right now, there is a whole, an entire generation that never knew anything that didn't come out of this tube. This tube can make or break presidents, popes, prime ministers. Television is not the truth. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We deal in illusions, man. None of it is true. But you people sit there day after day, night after night, all ages, colors, creeds.
Broadcasting live on network radio.
Don't turn off your television sets. Turn them off now. Turn them off and leave them off.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade.
It looks like one of those scenes of an old building being purposely dynamited and blown.
When we are successful,
I'm just a patsy.
And we will be.
You're ready to make to come to the microphone, so we'll listen up.
A new world order.
So my name's Robbie Parker.
It might have appeared that way, but from my close-up inspection, there's no evidence of a plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th.
President Kennedy died at 1 p.m.
Live from the Media Broadcasting Center.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, America, or whatever your time zone across this beautiful planet Earth of ours. You are tuned into the People Speak radio show with Steve Johnson. The People Speak show normally airs every Tuesday from 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific and 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS radio network. Anyone can participate during the show with call-in questions for our guests toll-free in the USA and Canada on 1-888-429-5471. That number again, 1-888-429-5471. We have a very, very special guest on our show tonight. I'm more excited than a Bilderberger at Bohemian Grove, knee-deep in goat's blood. We're talking tonight to former U.S. Marine and outspoken professor James Fetzer about his two new books available from moonrockbooks.com. They are called I Suppose We Didn't Go to the Moon Either, and Nobody Died at Sandy Hook. Welcome to the show, Professor Fetzer, sir.
Oh, hey, it's a great pleasure to be here. Thanks very much for inviting me.
You know, I've been looking forward to this for a while now.
Good.
We'll be taking audience questions after the first half hour, Professor, but my first question to you is, these books that you've written, they're a work in conjunction with Mike Palachek. Can you tell us what other contributors were involved in the printing of the books?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I just happen to have both of them right here. There are some really excellent contributors to the Moon book, which discusses not only evidence that we did not go to the moon. We have four chapters, 100 pages, by Nick Kohlerstrom, who's a historian of science from the UK. He's also the leading expert on the 7/7 London bombing attacks. He has a book entitled Terror on the Tube, now in its third edition. He was the most inclined to be sympathetic to the idea we went. Sterling Harwood, who's both a professor at a college in California and also an attorney at law, who's been very good on contributed to both books. Winston Wu, who has a wonderful article, 35 Proofs We Didn't Go to the Moon, wonderful stuff. And Jay Wiedner, who's well known on faking the moon landing and how it was done by Kubrick, filming it. That's a terrific piece. Then we have four chapters on what to me has been a surprisingly controversial issue and where I myself took a year and a half before I worked my way into understanding what was going on here, on whether Paul McCartney actually died, and it would appear to be, oddly enough, on 9/11 of 1966, and was replaced. And I had been in a long-standing exchange with someone who spoke at the conference I organized in Vancouver, a woman by the name of Claire Kuhn, who'd been long since convinced that this had happened. But it was only when I discovered the work of two Italian forensic scientists who demonstrated they set out to disprove the hypothesis by comparing the individuals named or called Paul McCartney before and after that date. But they found that they were, in fact, different, that they are different in their skulls and their shape of their faces. They're different in their palates. They're different in their teeth. They're even different in their height. And that was terribly important to me because all my work is scientifically oriented. I am a professional philosopher of science. I earned my PhD in the history and the philosophy of science at Indiana in 1970 and then had a 35-year career offering courses in logic, critical thinking, and scientific reasoning at a wide range of universities where I spent nearly 20 years, the last part of my career on the Duluth campus, the University of Minnesota, before I retired in 2006. But there's an article there by Sterling Harwood, again, the attorney and professor. Nick Kohlerstrom, again, anonymous student here, is actually the forensic evidence because I was able to obtain a translation into English. And then James Larson, who's a fellow out in Hollywood who's done a tremendous amount of research on this, wrote an utterly fascinating essay about it. So that's another 100 pages. Then there are the third part is about the first death of Saddam Hussein. I have had a long radio show with over 880 episodes called The Real Deal up until this year when it went video. And in those 880 episodes, I'd done interviews on a whole host of topics, and I was contacted by a woman by the name of Yvonne Wachter, who explained to me how the people didn't know, but Saddam Hussein was actually taken out on the 7th of April, 2003, just 3 weeks into the invasion of Iraq. And that wow. Bush was going to announce that he'd been taken out on the mission accomplished ceremony on the USS Lincoln off of the coast of San Diego. But they realized belatedly, we think it was Donald Rumsfeld, that the three presidents had signed executive orders forbidding the assassination of the leader of a foreign state. So that if he were to announce it, he'd actually be explained that he would be identifying himself as having broken the law. They thought that would be too sensational, so they let it go. Actually, one of his doubles was found in a spider hole. And Joe Veals from Australia, who was a brilliant journalist, noticed there were differences in their teeth and in their bite, that the real Saddam had excellent teeth and an overbite, but the double, the replacement, whom they claimed to find in a spider hole, had bad teeth and an underbite. And I went about verifying what Joe had reported and got the ace of spades from the deck of cards that the U.S. command in Iraq was using to identify all the principal players, and found he was exactly right. I verified it on multiple ways. And Yvonne knew about this because it was her son, Captain Chris Wachter, who actually had piloted the B-1 bomber that had done the run on a restaurant on the outskirts of Baghdad and taken out not only Saddam, but his two sons and 50 or 60 members of general staff. Huge, huge story. I published a couple articles about it in Veterans Today when I was a journalist there. I even called Ed Schultz and got him right before a lunchtime break and started to spell out the story. And he said, this was fantastic. Stand by. We'll get the rest of the story. And then he kept me hanging on the phone on my cell phone for an hour and a half and never came back to me. So I even published an article about how Ed Schultz had left me hanging. Then there's also two chapters about the second death of Osama bin Laden, because the raid on the compound in 2011 was a purely political stunt. Osama bin Laden had actually died on or about 15 December 2001 in Afghanistan from his medical maladies. It's tough to get those dialysis machines in and out of those caves in Afghanistan. There were local obituaries at the time. He was buried in an unmarked grave. David Ray Griffin has published a book about it, Osama bin Laden, Dead or Alive. Nick Kullerstrom, same guy, published an article entitled Osama bin Laden, 1957 to 2001. Osama was our man in Afghanistan. People don't understand. He was Colonel Tim Osman in the CIA. So, you know, the idea of demonizing him for 9/11 was simply absurd. But there it is. Interestingly, although we often think Fox News isn't, you know, is more propaganda or entertainment than news, they actually published a story. Osama bin Laden reported dead on 26 December of 2001, which you can still find online. I thought it was so important, I made a copy of it and put it in the book. Then we have, the final four chapters are about the Holocaust. Now, this, of course, is the most controversial, but I became interested when I was invited to participate in a conference on academic freedom. Are There Limits to Inquiry, JFK, 9/11, and the Holocaust, which were examples we were discussing. You know, are these forbidden subjects in the academic institutions? And I'd done so much work on JFK and 9/11, where I founded Scholars for 9/11 Truth in December of 2005, just 6 months before my retirement after that 35-year career, that I thought it would be interesting for me to dig in about the Holocaust. And in fact, Nick Holerstrom had published a new book about it entitled Breaking the Spell. That's quite brilliant. And, you know, among the points I was making that are reported in the book is that there are 236 references to 6 million Jews in dire straits or fear of loss of their life before the Nuremberg Tribunal and beginning as early as 1890. So we know that that number, 6 million, isn't empirically or scientifically based. In fact, it turns out to be derived from a disputed passage in Leviticus that's been interpreted as meaning that the chosen people can only return to the promised land when they're minus 6 million who have been consumed in the flames. But since there was no word for 6 million in the original Hebrew, it requires interpolation. In addition, there's scientific research relatively recent determining that if the bodies had, you know, died from cyanide poisoning, Zyklon B being a form of cyanide, they would have turned pink, and that the walls of chambers where cyanide was used would turn blue. But the only chambers that turned blue were those that were used for delousing, where Zyklon B actually was being used to delouse the inmates because they wanted to keep them healthy, free from dysentery, typhus, and the like, because these were work camps. These were labor camps. These were not centers for extermination. So that I brought together three world-class experts on the Holocaust. Thomas Dalton, who published a book, The Holocaust Debate, quite brilliant. Robert Forresson, who's just sensational, and who explained that the Nuremberg tribunals were conducted to divert responsibility for the massive deaths of Germans that occurred from the Allied bombing of German cities, which was itself a war crime, onto the Germans, where the Allies had actually interdicted the railroad tracks that led to the camps, so that there was a lot of starvation in the camps at the end of the war because the Germans were unable to resupply the camps because the Allies had bombed the railroad lines. So that, you know, this brilliant article by Robert Forresson is in the book. And then Nick Holerstrom has another chapter where he talks about that more recent scientific research to which I alluded. So that's an intro to the Moon book. I found so much fascinating stuff. For example, that more Catholics than Jews died at Auschwitz.
The
International Committee of the Red Cross actually updated their numbers. They were going to all these camps and keeping very meticulous records about who died and their cause of death. And they revised them in 1993, and their final report was 297,081, far removed from 6 million. And where I was so intrigued by some of the photographs in Nick's book, I put one on the back cover of the book, namely of the British football team at Auschwitz, with a statement, what, you didn't know there was a UK soccer team at Auschwitz? And these people are all, you know, very healthy, vigorous. In fact, I included a map of Auschwitz where you find all kinds of features you might not have supposed would be there. They had a symphony hall, for example. They had a hospital with OBGY. They had, you know, other facilities for woodworking shop. They even had a brothel. They had a brothel at Auschwitz, believe it or not. So,
wow. You're kidding me, right? I could see Colonel Klink going to order one of the ladies.
Right. Colonel Klink, yeah. Well, I'll just tell you, I mean, this is a serious book, and there's a lot of great stuff in it. And remarkably enough, Amazon has not banned the Moon book. You would think if they were going to be upset about something. But of 20 books, they have 20 books on Sandy Hook, but only one of those books took the position that the government was wrong and demonstrated that it was untrue that anyone had died at Sandy Hook. And, of course, that's the title, Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, a book that has –
Before we get on to the Sandy Hook book, I just want to clarify a few things about the first book, and I suppose we didn't go to the moon either. Now, you mentioned Robert Forresson. Is it not true that in a French court they actually found that they ruled, in fact, that the entire propaganda about the Holocaust was nothing more than Western war propaganda at the end of the war? Is that not true?
Well, you know, that may be true. I'm not an expert on Forresson's history. I do know that when there was a trial of Ernst Zundel, who had, explained that the Holocaust had all been an exaggeration for political purposes to benefit the Zionist cause. When he was taken to trial in 1984 and 1986, as I recall, they could not produce a single witness to testify that Jews had been put to death using gas in special chambers in any of these camps.
I mentioned that because the late, great Anthony Lawson put out a video called A Great Man, Robert Farsam, that showed straight after the court trial the French court were actually ruling that the Holocaust was pure Western propaganda. And that video is still up online today. So
I think that's very good. Anthony and I had a falling out over an issue related to 9/11, which you may or may not want to discuss, about whether real planes had actually crashed or been used on 9/11. That's a very interesting issue. But Anthony had a tremendous, and it took me a year and a half of constant badgering from Morgan Reynolds and Judy Wood before I, as the founder of Scholars for 9/11 Truth, could bring myself to look at the evidence, because I thought the whole idea was so preposterous. And now, today, I'm probably one of the world's leading advocates of what's known as no planes theory, which really is the conjunction of four propositions, namely that Flight 11 did not hit the North Tower, that Flight 77 did not crash into the Pentagon, that Flight 93 did not crash into Shanksville, and that Flight 175 did not hit the South Tower. And people think, well, isn't that absurd? Because don't we have videos? But the problem is the videos appear to be fraudulent. There are three different ways it could be fraudulent. The analysis that explains it, because they're actually violating the laws of physics. If you look at 175, the way it effortlessly enters the South Tower, there should have been a collision. There should have been an impact. The plane should have crumpled against the wall, the facade. It was an intricate steel and concrete structure, massive, 500,000 tons. It was intersecting eight different floors, each floor of which consisted of a steel truss filled with 4 to 8 inches of concrete. So at 208 feet on the side, you had eight different floors, each of which had an acre of concrete on a steel truss connected to the core columns on the inside and the external steel support columns on the out, which were massive enough all by themselves. I published a whole lot about this now. But Anthony wanted to insist that they were special planes. He talked about the wings being coated with depleted uranium and all this. Well, it was a fantasy. I mean, Anthony did so much good work, but depleted uranium is one of the densest materials known to man, and it would completely alter the aerodynamics. You'd have to redesign, and it's a preposterous idea anyway, but Anthony was kind of infatuated with that sort of idea. No real plane could have effortlessly entered the North or the South Tower. It was a physical impossibility, and that's why they had to resort to faking it, which was done in a very sophisticated manner. But this may be something we want to defer for later conversation. I'll just tell you, I have no doubt about it. The best work on this has been done by a fellow in England by the name of Richard Hall with his Flight 175 3D radar analysis, and I can go through it in detail. But Anthony did a lot of great work. His This Is an Orange, for example, is simply brilliant. And he did, of course, the voice for the Towers of Dust. That was also a brilliant piece. But on the no planes theory, he and I clashed, so that he wound up, denouncing me to the end of his days.
Goodness me. Are you aware of Web Ferry's work and people like Nick
Ohouse? Yeah, sure. Web Ferry, absolutely. I was perhaps the first person to put Web Ferry on the air. I put her on my radio show, The Real Deal. You can find the interview at radiofetzer.blogspot.com.
Wow.
I was the first person, to the best of my knowledge, to interview Judy Wood, too. And that was on the 11th of November of 2006. And Steve Jones, Kevin Ryan, and those people were so upset that I wanted to broaden the range of theories under consideration, because I was already convinced that nanothermite could not have done it. Nanothermite is an incendiary. It has brilliant light, very high temperatures. It's been used historically to weld railroad tracks together or to disable artillery shells. You drop a thermite grenade down the barrel of a howitzer and it fuses the mechanism, so it's a useless weapon. but it doesn't have the rapid gas expansion properties of explosives and could not have been responsible for blowing apart the Twin Towers. And I have pressed them on that repeatedly. I co-authored three articles about nanothermite with T. Mark Hightower, who's a chemical engineer. And these were years ago, but they still want to pretend that nanothermite could have done the job. And when they allude to, well, it could have been combined with explosives to be explosive, I point out the same is true of toothpaste. It could be combined with explosives to be explosives. I do, however, think that thermite or nanothermite played a role in cutting out the images of the planes on the sides of the buildings, which I believe was actually set up by the Gelatin Group, these Israeli art students who were occupying the locations at the top of the towers and doing external, what they call performance art outside of the buildings. It was absolutely fascinating stuff. And, Rebecca Roth, whom I have managed with a collaboration of others to expose as a fraud, did a lot of good work in her books, Methodical Illusion and Methodical Deception. It's just that she wasn't an airline attendant for 30 years. She actually had a long career in the natural oils business. She had a co-worker there where the name she used there was Monica Gaynor, that was named Michael on her more recent show, from which she was removed today or yesterday, actually, because of all of this.
She no longer has a program there?
Right. She was just removed because of what I'm telling you. And she had a co-worker on there named Ramjet. And not only did we have an audio tape that showed that Monica and Rebecca were the same person. I mean, it's that same distinctive voice, those same verbal gestures, the same laugh, the same coquettish style. But even Ramjet turns out to be the same as Michael on her new show is Ramjet. The old show was Michael, but it's the same guy. He appears to have been the publisher of her two books, and also I'm fairly convinced they're married, in fact. But there's been a lot of research on this. In fact, Pete Santilli has just released a study about this. He was on the same network, and he went back and did research on Rebecca and discovered her actual name was Sarah, S-A-R-A. It's not even Rebecca or Monica, but Sarah. So, you know, there's more coming out about this. It's a really fascinating story because so much in the 9/11 movement swooned over what they were learning from Rebecca in Methodical Illusion and Methodical Deception. I had published three blogs about her. One was entitled Rebecca Roth's Methodical Illusion, Pros and Cons, where I specifically commented favorably about her identification of the role of Israel in all of this and of the Gelatin Group. But I have a friend who was the top Navy troubleshooter in electronics before he left the Navy to join Raytheon by the name of Dennis Camino. And Dennis had spent 6 hours talking to Rebecca in an evident effort by Rebecca to recruit some technical experts to support her work. But after the 6 hours, he was convinced that Rebecca was a fraud, in part because she had told him that by shutting off the transponder, the plane would no longer be visible to radar, which is a kind of confusion that no one in the business would ever make because the transponder sends out an identification signal. But radar sends out radio waves that bounce off of objects in the air and reflect back, and shutting off the transponder would not cause those radio waves to not bounce back off of a plane in the air. So she sent Dennis an inscribed copy of her book. I've got it in my hand as I speak. And it says, Dennis, keep the truth alive. Fasten your seatbelt. Rebecca Roth. Because he didn't even want to open it. She had called him and he traced her phone number back to Langley, and that made him very suspicious. Dennis knows a lot about the spook business, and he was already convinced. So when I did this very first blog about Rebecca, I did talk about the pros and the cons, just as I'm doing with you now. Then I got deeper into this, and it looked more and more fishy. And I published a second entitled Rebecca's Methodical Illusion May Be Rebecca Herself. And then a fellow by the name of Alan Powell, with whom who's from Australia and done some brilliant work on Sandy Hook. He was responsible for two of the chapters, 7 and 8, that I'll talk about, each of which has 50 photographs, 50 in the chapter 7 of them furnishing the Lanza home to serve as a prop, and then 50 of them refurbishing the school to serve as the stage. So that Alan published his third blog, which is entitled A Fiction Writing Fiction About a Fiction. You know, that's so odd in the first place. She'd be putting this information out in the form of a novel, but it gives her plausible deniability. You know, if anyone attacked her for having something wrong, she could always say, well, it was just a novel. But the fact of the matter is, she does not appear to have actually had that history as a stewardess. That appears to be a fabrication. She also does a lot of praise of Steve Jones and architects and engineers, and I've already explained to you why there are problems with them about the nanothermite. So she's in essence trying to reinforce or revive architects and engineers, which has gone so far as in the Journal of 9/11 Studies. And when Steve first created it, I told him, because of my extensive editorial background, that the key to the journal was the editorial board. He had to have an impeccable group of editors and not simply appoint cronies and friends, but he appointed cronies and friends so that there are articles on in the Journal of 9/11 Studies that maintain that the Pentagon was actually hit by a Boeing 757. Now, I have published at least a half a dozen articles demonstrating that's false. Dennis, who knows so much about flight, did a brilliant job of a photographic portfolio about the Pentagon. Believe me, the evidence that no plane hit the Pentagon is overwhelming. And I can send you a link, you know, a list of articles. Interestingly, I had 150 articles on Veterans Today about all these subjects, Sandy Hook, Boston bombing, 9/11, JFK, more. From 2011, when Gordon Duff first invited me to become a journalist there, until earlier this year, when he canned me because I was writing about Jade Helm. Gordon had been severely critical of another journalist for Veterans Today writing about Jade Helm. And I thought that was all wrong. So I published an article explaining why Gordon was wrong and Jade Helm was not an ordinary training drill. And the next day, he sacked me from Veterans Today. I noticed weeks later, he still had my name on the masthead as though I were still there. And I said, Gordon, isn't it time to take it off? You know, he took off my name. He deleted all 150 of my articles. But that apparently had such an impact on the readers of Veterans Today, who they may have lost as much as 50% of their readership, that the editorial board about 6 weeks later voted to have them restored. And eventually, there's a little song and dance that went along with that, too. But they have been restored. Once I discovered they were up, I transferred 70 of the 150 to my blog. So if you go to October 28, 29, 30, you're going to find I've got 30 or 40 articles in each of those days because I was transferring them like mad, getting my best JFK stuff and 9/11 stuff out of Veterans Today onto my own blog.
Okay, Professor Fetzer, what circumstances surrounding the initial concepts for writing the two books that you have? First of all, and we didn't go to the moon either. What was the initial concept that gave birth to that book?
Well, what's interesting about that is the first book was supposed to be Nobody Died at Sandy Hook. So, you know, so an obvious response to that would be, and I suppose we didn't go to the moon either, because everyone believes, you know, the story we've been told about Sandy Hook. This came from the fertile imagination of Mike Palachek, who's an absolutely wonderful guy who had the inspiration for the series, Resist the Empire, Save the World, in which these books are volumes. And it was his idea that we should do these books. But then because of my editorial experience, it fell to me to edit them, to actually get them done. So Mike was the creative mind behind the whole series, and there are going to be other books. I mean, I'm in the process of completing the third, which will be about the Boston bombing. And I just hope the American people will catch on, that we are taking these apart so thoroughly, so systematically, that in the case of the Sandy Hook book, the Amazon decided it had to ban, which I'm sure was a consequence of political pressure. Jay Carney, who had been the White House press secretary, had left the White House to go to Amazon.com as senior vice president. The Sandy Hook had been used as the fulcrum of the Obama gun control agenda. They expected to get, you know, 26 lobbyists with anti-gun lobbyists with impeccable credentials because they lost children or loved ones at Sandy Hook. And, you know, this book was demonstrating that it's a complete fraud. So, you know, there it is. And I even have a appendix in there showing that when you ban guns, crime goes up for the obvious reason that you're taking guns away from law-abiding citizens. And that means it's the criminals who have the guns. It turns out that there's a 20-minute delay between a 911 call to the police in an emergency and their actual arrival. But most of the mayhem occurs in the first 5 minutes. So that if you don't have weapons yourself, you can't count on the police to arrive in time. Your daughter may have been raped, your wife mugged, you may have been killed. In fact, when we're on the verge of war, it's absolutely fantastic to promote gun control because, you know, if Russia and the U.S. come to blows, and there are many in the Obama administration who are seeking to promote precisely that outcome, Washington and New York are going to be taken out immediately. That means we're going to be living in a post-nuclear Jericho world, as the series, short-lived film TV series demonstrated. If you don't have weapons to arm yourself, you're going to be subject to the rape, robbery, mayhem by marauding gangs.
Subject to fascism.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, Obama has got it 100% wrong. In fact, the European countries now, Germany, for example, they're going crazy over guns because of this influx of Muslims. Sweden has become the rape capital of the universe because there are all these thuggish, immigrants who are completely uncivilized, and they're just raping women right and left. I mean, it's complete outrage.
Well, we'll stick with us, Mr. Fetzer, sir. This is the People Speak Radio Show. I'm your host, Steve Johnson. We're live on radio, internet radio, coming to you live across the world. And we'll be right back with our guest and audience questions after this short message break. You're listening to the People Speak Radio Show on the BBS Radio Network online, coming to you live across America and across the beautiful planet Earth, either in live stream, podcast, or on video. No matter whether you're on the globe or on the flat Earth or maybe in another astral plane, wherever you are, you're tuned in and you're listening. God bless you. I'm your host for this beautiful evening, and we're back with our guest tonight. He's a former U.S. Marine and a researcher of false flags. His website is www.jamesfetzer.blogspot.com. Do check it out. Welcome back there, Professor Fetzer, sir.
Oh, great. I'm glad to be back. And perhaps I should add that the banning was quite a blunder, because instead of selling, 8,000 or 10,000 copies of the book, I immediately released it to the public for free as a PDF. So that we're getting millions of downloads of the PDF. So I think that, you know, this, they thought they were being clever, but it seems to have backfired. And now we have found a new printer and publisher, new printer and distributor at moonrockbooks.com. So you can now get both of these volumes in bound editions, but also have the benefit of the color photographs and the PDF that's available for free, because in order to keep the price down, we printed all the pictures in the book in black and white.
And we'll certainly be giving the people in the chat room and the people online and the people watching this video, we'll be giving them the link to download that if they so wish to. And, of course, the link to buy the book from moonrocksbooks.com, which I would recommend to support your work and get some more books written on these types of subjects.
Yes, yes, yes. Have you put out a number for people to call in, or is it done a different way?
Yes, sir. People can call in, but we have got some questions here from the guests. We have a question from Winston Smith in Hawaii, who says, Professor Jim, could you please tell us who reported to you that the 1 terabyte worth of FOIA records were stolen by Rebecca Roth, and how did she accomplish this?
Well, actually, that's one of those cases where you have sources that you don't want to put on the spot. I mean, I'm an investigative journalist, and it's well known. You know, these are people who had been taken for a ride by Rebecca and did their own research and discovered this fellow had this huge amount of work he'd done, and that Rebecca commandeered it. But, I mean, you know, I think Rebecca is toast. I think you can stick a fork in her. She's done.
We have a question from Suicide Blonde in Arkansas, talking about the No Plane theory. Professor Fetzer, sir, don't you believe that these things were drones, that they could not have possibly been any kind of commercial airplane at all?
Well, that was the original plan. I have no doubt that Dov Zakheim, you know, was the controller of the Pentagon when it went missing the $2.3 trillion. had a company with remote control systems. So that was the original plan. And I think it was only when they discovered that it was physically impossible to get a real plane all the way into the building before it exploded that they had to abandon that approach. So, I mean, it's very plausible, except that it violates the laws of physics. You would have had, you know, equal and opposite force. People like to talk about how fast the plane was flying, which pilots have determined was faster than was, in fact, aerodynamically possible for a 767 at that altitude. But they don't talk about the enormous horizontal resistance posed by these massive 500,000-ton buildings. And as I mentioned, in this instance, the South Tower, Flight 175, was intersecting with 8 different floors with the steel trusses filled with, you know, an acre of concrete apiece. We know what happens to a commercial carrier when it encounters a tiny bird weighing a few ounces in flight. Well, imagine encountering an acre of concrete on a steel truss. It was not physically possible. They would have crumpled up against the building, the wings, tail, bodies, seats, luggage falling to the ground, the engines would have entered, but in fact we know that an engine found at Church in Murray was actually planted there. It was an antiquated engine, an old engine, not currently in service. It was underneath a steel scaffolding just sitting on the sidewalk, and Jack White, who was a legendary photo and film analyst with whom I did years of collaborative research on JFK, also became interested in 9/11 and discovered Fox News footage, there's Fox on the job again, of a white van where there's a group of maybe as many as 5 men in FBI vests unloading something heavy. They were clearly delivering the engine to be a plant at the intersection of Church and Murphy, and subsequently a landing gear was found wedged between 2 buildings, but it had a piece of rope attached to it that had been used to lower it into place.
Wow, very interesting stuff. I hadn't heard about that. We have John from Ontario on line 1. Are you there, John?
I'm here.
Go ahead, sir, with your question. And Professor Fetzer, are you ready?
Sure, go ahead.
Hi, Professor. I want to preface my question with this. First of all, I believe that there are many false flags that have been perpetrated on us. I'm not arguing that point at all. And secondly, I think we are right to question everything and anything. So I don't disregard a lot of what you're saying. But with respect to Sandy Hook, I wanted to ask you this question. There's a school board that is in charge of that Sandy Hook school, correct?
Yeah, sure.
How many people work at that school board?
Well, Wolfgang Halbig and I went to Newtown so we could meet with the school board and confront them with our research. You're not appreciating that the school was closed by 2008. Everyone knew it was closed. All the parents were crisis active.
Right, so here's my question.
Look, they were all in
on it. I want to know how you get an entire school board to be complicit with a false flag operation like that. Can you explain that?
Sure. They thought they were doing good. They thought that we have a need for more gun control. Eric Holder was a fanatic on the subject. He actually had stated to a Democratic Women's National Conference in 1995 that we need to brainwash the American people to change their attitude about guns. Sandy Hook was a very cleverly contrived hoax, many years in the planning to accomplish precisely that purpose. The school board had an abandoned school that was loaded with asbestos and other biohazards. When I got up there and had my 3 minutes to speak to the school board, I asked them, when were the parents notified that their children were attending school in a toxic waste dump? If you look at the massive evidence we have put together proving that the school was closed, and I recommend you go to my blog. Just do this, do a search on the following title, Debunking the Sandy Hook Debunkers, #1, #1, was it an operating school? You will discover it was not an operating school. We prove it dozens of different ways.
I'm asking you about that.
Huh?
I'm asking you, do you think it's reasonable to think that everybody in a school board would be complicit with this to a name?
Well, I don't like a coulda, woulda, shoulda arguments. I mean, this is a fact of what happened. There's no doubt about it.
How many members of the school board are there?
Well, I don't know, a dozen or more. The
a
whole
dozen?
Community, for God's sake, you're not understanding. The whole community was in on it. The governor was in on it.
My local school board.
The Connecticut State Police.
Has over 400 people in it.
We need to get another caller because he's not going to look at the evidence. He's got a preconception, and it's frankly stupid because
so
we have evidence that shows something happened.
Every school board member bought into this conspiracy. Is that right?
Yeah, and they wound up getting $50 million for a new school when the average cost of a kindergarten through fourth grade school is only $7 million. I looked into it. You haven't. For God's sake, we got a free book out there. Read it. You don't understand how stupid your question is.
Okay, so Professor, here's the thing. You've got these people in charge of our children, and you're telling me that they would be this complicit and this underhanded to the American people? And they're in charge of our children?
I'm not just telling you. We have proven it. We have proven it. 425 pages of proof. Let's go to another.
But you don't know how many people work at the school board.
This is a waste of time.
I do hear you, Professor Fetzer. And you know what? I believe he hasn't heard of Mr. David Wheeler. And David Wheeler was one of the fathers of the so-called victims of Noah. And apparently, he actually turned up in FBI outfit. He actually turned up in an FBI outfit on the day of Sandy Hook.
Yeah.
And then went on to present as a family member. And indeed, he actually turns out he was a stooge. He was an actor, crisis actor.
He was
walking, out to be nobody in particular.
He was walking up and down Dickinson Drive in a military style, carrying a weapon, and he was also playing the role of a grieving father. And his wife, Francine, was even featured by Obama in the White House. The only other person to have given a talk out of the Oval Office, apart from Obama, is Joe Biden and Francine Wheeler on behalf of gun control. Obama was in on it. Eric Holder was in on it. The governor of the state was in on it. The Connecticut State Police were in on it. It's so elaborate. And I understand why this guy has difficulty imagining he wouldn't do something like that. But unfortunately, this is exactly what happened at Sandy Hook. And for him to come on and be hysterical when I'm explaining where he can find the proof, trading on coulda, woulda, shoulda, you know, gee, he can't imagine how they could have done it. Well, man up, they did it.
Well, you know, sir, this is the People Speak radio show, and we get questions from everybody. And,
yeah,
and that's what I love
I'm taking
about it.
He took over 8.5 minutes with a question that I'd already answered, but which he hasn't researched, you know. I mean, you can come people who have hardcore beliefs that they're not going to change regardless of the evidence. There's a mountain of evidence. I've even told them where to go.
We do have a question from Majid from Canada. What about the people who appeared on the media talking about their lost ones in Sandy Hook? They're easy to track. Did you track them down and talk to them or find out about their loved ones?
This is really unbelievable. Sure. I mean, I had published 30 articles on Sandy Hook before we did the book. Some of the most blatant cases were, for example, Robbie Parker, who claims to have lost his daughter, Emily, the day after, comes out of the building. He's all jocular, laughing, jovial. All of a sudden, he sees the press. He stops and hyperventilates to get into character and proceeds to talk about the loss of his daughter, but doesn't forget to mention the donation sites. You know, we didn't really go through Sandy Hook because I spent so much time on the moon book, but we have discovered the FEMA manual. It was a 2-day drill. It had a rehearsal on the 13th going live on the 14th. That's why you had the sign, everyone must check in. That's why you had boxes of bottled water and pizza cartons at the firehouse. That's why there were so many there with name tags on lanyards. That's why there were porta potties already in place. That's why parents were even bringing children to the scene. Does anyone seriously believe a parent would bring a child to the scene of a child shooting massacre? And so
absolutely
many of
not.
Them didn't understand the difference between the rehearsal and going live the following day, so that many donation websites for the survivors were put up on the 13th. Even Adam Lanza was recorded in the Social Security Death Index as having died on the 13th. I mean, there's a mountain of this. It's all in the book. I mean, I've given it to you for free. I suggest you download it and read it. If you got questions about Sandy Hook, it's going to be hard for me to imagine what question isn't answered there.
Yes, sir. We have a question from Jane Goubels in New Jersey. Every 5 years, we seem to get a new Holocaust movie. Professor Fetzer, are we not just about due for a new one?
I'm sorry, I missed the key word there.
Oh, I beg your pardon. Jingle Bells in New Jersey asks the question, every 5 years, we seem to get a new Holocaust movie. Are we not just due for a new one?
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt, no doubt. I mean, you know, Hollywood is dominated by persons who want to support the Hollywood mythology. I mean, you got these great movies, Schindler's List, you know, the piano, Sophie's Choice and all this, and they're very touching. They're just a false narrative. These were not extermination centers, and 6 million Jews were not put roast to death or put gas to death in and then cremated in the ovens. People have made calculations how long it would take given the amount of time and energy it requires to cremate a human body. And I think if you were doing 6 million, we'd probably still be cremating them today.
Well, you know, the interesting thing, Professor Fetzer, sir, is the word Holocaust is actually a Jewish and Hebrew word, which means a burnt offering. It means a sacrifice that is offered by them to get something in return from Jehovah.
Yes, 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 yes.
People just don't get? That's their own sacrifice of their own people, of their own livestock, to their God to get whatever blessings that they're getting from that particular sacrifice.
Not to make an obvious point, but the leading practitioners of false flag attack in the world are the Israelis. They dressed up a gang of Ergun terrorists to bomb the King David Hotel back in 1946 to drive the British out of Palestine. They attacked the USS Liberty in 1967 to try to draw the U.S. into the war against Egypt. They didn't really need us. Lyndon Johnson was complicit in that. In 1992 and 94, they attacked their own embassy in Buenos Aires to retaliate against Argentina's cooperation with Iran in the peaceful development of nuclear energy. They first attacked their own embassy in 1992, where about two dozen died. They claimed it was a car bomb, but the building blew up from the inside out. And when that didn't garner enough attention, they did it again on their Jewish community center in 1994, again claiming a car bomb. In that case, it was about 84 people who died. I published about all these things. There's an article entitled False Flag Attacks in Argentina 1992 and 1994 on VoltaireNet.org with Adrian Salbucci from Argentina. And, of course, 9/11 was brought to us by the CIA, the neocons, and the Department of Defense, half of whom were dual U.S.-Israeli citizens and the Mossad. So we can go through all of this. It's just there's a huge history here. And, you know, nothing to be – that's why on 9/11, some of you may recall, between the destruction of the South Tower and the North, and the South Tower only had these very modest fires for about an hour – before it collapsed, whereas Underwriters Laboratory had certified the steel used in the building to 2,000 degrees for 3 or 4 hours without suffering any adverse effects, and where when NIST studied 236 samples of steel from the buildings, they found 233 had not been exposed to temperatures above 500 degrees Fahrenheit, the other three not above 1,200 degrees Fahrenheit, which means that these fires lasted, you know, burnt neither hot enough nor long enough to cause any damage to the steel. And where in the North Tower, the fires only endured for an hour and a half. But in between, they ran footage of Palestinians rejoicing. And it was given, it was there, they had it right at hand to convey the impression that Palestinians were happy about what happened on 9/11. It turned out to be archival footage of distant, you know, years earlier, where something religious or political event had called Palestinians to rejoice. But that gives you a signal as to who was behind 9/11. In fact, they even reported on national television that the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine was taking responsibility, which is so absurd I can't begin to tell you. It had nothing to do with 19 Islamic terrorists, and Osama bin Laden was our man in Afghanistan, as I've already explained. This was poppycock, and Americans have been just sold. They have been bamboozled over 9/11. It's a complete outrage.
And that is, in fact, one of the headlines of one of your articles at Veterans Today that caught my interest about your research. Have we been bamboozled?
Yeah, yeah. That was originally published by a Canadian journal. It's a real nice little article just talking about, what, four different issues, and two of them had to do.
Fantastic. I recommend everybody to search that term.
Yeah. Well, most of my articles are longer. You know, I like to embed lots of evidence, photographs, diagrams, documents, and give lots of sources. So that was atypical because it was one of my shorter articles, but it was very popular.
I do have a question here from Jane Bond in New Hampshire asking, Professor Fetzer, sir, have you heard that all new FBI agents have to tour the Holocaust Museum as part of their induction?
I think I have heard that. And how ridiculous can you get? I mean, you know, this just demonstrates the exorbitant, really excessive influence that Israel has over the United States. I mean, JFK actually had the World Jewish Congress registered as a foreign agent. He would have done the same with AIPAC. No president since has had the courage and integrity to demand that happen. AIPAC is by far the most powerful lobby in Washington, D.C. I've heard absurd rebuttals such as, how could a little country geographically like Israel control a big country like the United States? It's got nothing to do with the relative size of the geography of the countries. Israel has for too long exercised grossly disproportionate influence over the United States Senate, some members of whom ought to openly declare themselves to be senators from Israel.
Well, you know, Professor Fetzer, sir, the current president of the United States won a Nobel Prize just a few years ago. Is this not a sure sign that our system is rigged to glorify war criminals?
It was an absurdity. Barack Obama has sent military forces into 17 different nations in Africa alone. Afghanistan is the longest war in which the United States has ever engaged, and we're there primarily to protect the poppy crops so the CIA can harvest them because they make so much money, from the drug trade. They got hooked on cocaine in Southeast Asia. Now they want to perpetuate the drug wars. That's why the war on drugs perseveres to keep the price high so the CIA can cash in. It's got nothing to do. Marijuana is relatively innocuous. It should never have been made illegal just because a generation prefers to smoke its high rather than drink it. They have spent endless amounts of money on an investigation prosecution for the harmless crime of smoking joints. That's completely ridiculous. You take working men and women who are producing taxes, put them into prisons. We have to then pay for them. It probably runs about $100,000 to keep an individual incarcerated in prison per year. For smoking joints, that's completely absurd. It's beyond belief, but the war on drug continues to this day.
One last question. Do you support the stop funding of Israel?
Yes, I certainly do. Israel has been, you know, it's not even legal for Israel to be receiving funding from the United States because they have undeclared massive stockpile of nuclear, biological, and chemical weapons, and our foreign policy guidelines preclude giving any foreign aid to a country with undeclared nuclear weapons. So Israel, wow, frankly, is not entitled to any foreign aid from the United States if we were only to adhere to our own guidelines, and that we are not, is another indication of their pernicious influence over the United States government.
Would you not see that Israel is actually occupied Palestine after all?
Oh, actually, that's a very fascinating question, because recent DNA studies have shown that the occupants of Israel are not descended of the tribe of Judea. They come from the Ukraine, the Khazarian region, or Europe, which means that since the identification of Semites is a linguistic one and all the Arabs are Semites, Israel turns out to be the greatest practitioner of anti-Semitism in the world.
Absolutely. Well, fantastic. Thank you very much for your answers and questions. We're going to have to get you on here again on the BBS Radio Network because
gladly,
everybody loved you. The room has never been so full.
Gladly.
Fantastic. Thank you, sir. Thanks so much for being on the show today, Professor Jim Fetzer, sir.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Wonderful. Join us coming up soon on the People...